August 14th, 1936, the Olympic Games began in Nazi Germany. It was Adolf Hitler's intent to show the world the power of the new Germany. However, the star of the 36 Games was not Adolf Hitler nor his master race. A young American Negro from Ohio State University named Jesse Owens succeeded in winning 4 gold medals in track and field. Although it seemed insignificant at the time, Adolf Hitler displayed a warning for the future. After congratulating the German bronze and silver winners, the Führer turned and walked away from Jesse Owens, the gold medal winner.
Don't worry, darling.
A short 3 years later, the warning would become a reality.
Ah, excuse me. A German officer greets his British guests.
Good evening, Professor O'Hara. Lieutenant Rowland.
Yes, of course. My wife, Robin. Mrs. O'Hara?
An American officer arrives with a glamorous young woman.
Really, Raymond?
Roland notices them.
General Foster.
Good evening, Lieutenant.
Good evening.
If you don't mind, I took the liberty of bringing someone with me.
The young woman smiles.
We are honored to have Frau Ackermann with us.
You know each other.
In Germany, everyone knows Annelies Ackermann, General. She is our most famous dramatic actress.
Who would have thought it, General? A bit of rain, a taxi that never arrived, and lo and behold, you and I meet. It's just like in the cinema. The General was kind enough to offer me a ride in his car and then invited me to dinner. No German would dare to be so forward with me, you know. It's a little tiring sometimes to be considered a famous star.
I suppose I stepped out of line. I hope you'll forgive me.
Forgive you? No, never. I thank you.
A waiter whispers in Roland's ear.
We can be seated.
At the dinner table.
Oh, I hardly think they're purposefully set up to create an international incident.
I agree. He wants war, it'll take more than refusal to shake the hand of an American Negro, don't you think?
Yes, but still, not all English feel the way you do, Professor O'Hara. I can guarantee the Führer has no intention of starting a war. His was simply a reflection of his attitude toward racial minorities, certain racial minorities. Jews, for example.
As Foster and O'Hara frown, Annelies looks away.
Listen to how well they play. It's my favorite song.
Gentlemen, Professor O'Hara.
Roland hands out medallions.
General Foster, a small souvenir of the Olympics and of the friendships gained as a result of them. Excuse me, if this sounds like a speech, it is only because it has been a double pleasure for me. An official pleasure to serve as a member of the Olympic Committee and to deal with you both as members of your Liaison team, and a deep personal pleasure as well.
Foster turns over the medallion. The back is inscribed, Gott mit uns. Smiling, he shakes his head.
I'm afraid I had the same idea. Only I'm not as good with words.
He hands Roland an almost identical medallion whose back is inscribed, In God We Trust.
Besides, you've already expressed my feelings better than I could. Maybe all the people who claim that we military men don't have very much imagination are right after all.
And the fond hope we'll be together again in 4 years.
O'Hara, Roland, Foster, and Annelies lift their glasses.
To our friendship, General. Peace.
They nod and drink.
On September 1st, 1939, Hitler's blitzkrieg began. The Lightning War attacked Poland. The Führer unleashed a mechanized war machine, the like of which the world had never seen. Within a matter of days, Poland was crushed. The city's a mass of rubble. The people in a state of total confusion and panic. It was only the beginning. Before it ended, the Nazi juggernaut had conquered most of Europe, the Balkans, half of Russia, most of Scandinavia, and was surging victoriously toward Egypt and North Africa. is to be here in this desert wasteland that Hitler's war would fail. The Allies would be successful in what history would later refer to as the greatest battle. In 1942, the German high command was confident of success. They were prematurely enjoying the fruits of their total victory.
More admirers, eh?
Roland and Annelise enter a hotel room filled with flowers.
I bought them. It's the only luxury that I still permit myself.
I've got a surprise for you. Wait, no, don't look.
As she covers her eyes, he turns on the record player. Uncovering her eyes, she looks wistfully at Roland.
Seems timeless. The rain, no taxi, the restaurant, and you. Thank you.
It hardly seems like 6 years, does it?
I know. Do you recall the name of the American general who introduced us? Ford. Ford?
Foster, General Foster from West Point.
Oh, Foster.
Could you forget him, huh? If it wasn't because of him, we would never have met. Annelise, since we have been married, have you been happy?
It's been the happiest time of my life.
He smiles and kisses her affectionately.
Can't hear it like this.
He lifts the needle.
Terrible war.
How long are you going to go on hiding in this place? Why didn't you leave when it was still possible?
Why? You know why. This is your country. You're a German.
So are you a German? But you are also Jewish.
Of course we could have escaped from the country together. But wouldn't you have suffered? Wouldn't you have been ashamed not to fight for your country? And you would have hated me for it. I don't want that. I love you.
Annelise, please.
No, don't say a thing. Nobody is going to find me in this old, forgotten hotel. And the war is going to end soon anyway. Everybody says so. And then you will return and we will be together.
Los Angeles, May 1942. A Rolls-Royce speeds down the highway. General Foster rides in the back.
The attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, brought the United States into the war. By May of the following year, attempts were made to bring all available military personnel back to active duty.
Arriving at a stately home, Foster gets out of the car. He enters the house. Hearing music, he removes his military cap and strides across the living room. In the study...
Hi, Dad.
His son turns off the music.
You're home early.
Foster walks grimly to his desk.
Matter of fact, you're the one who's home early. I thought you and your friends would be gone all week.
So did we. But two of the guys have to report for induction sooner than they thought. So we cut the trip short a couple of days. You're wearing your uniform.
I've been called out of retirement. They need me back at the point. But there's so many instructors going off to war. I'll be leaving next week.
Next week? So soon?
That's right. John. I just come from the university. The dean called, wanted to see me. He tells me you failed two exams. If your attendance record were better, they might allow you back next semester, but that isn't the case. Why didn't you tell me anything, John?
Deadly.
There's nothing you can say. I consider your behavior to be an insult to me and to the tradition of this family. You've no choice now, either change another school or get a job. I'm not going to continue to... Hello? Dad! How are you, son? No kidding. Oh, that's just great. Ted, you couldn't have made me happier. I'm real proud of you, son. What's that? You get my card.
John glances at a picture of his brother.
King's bishop to queen rook 4. Done. I'll send my answer in just a couple of days. John?
Just fine, Ted. In fact, he's right. He was right here just a minute ago.
Later, Foster sits alone at the dinner table. The butler tops up his wine glass. Reaching for the glass, Foster takes a sip. When he notices the butler look toward the living room, he puts down his glass and turns.
I wasn't expecting you.
It's John, in uniform.
I enlisted a few days ago. I'll be getting my orders tomorrow.
He sits down.
William, set a place for John, will you please?
Foster shakes his head.
Isn't it strange the way this happened?
What do you mean?
My father never approved of my following a military career. Wanted me in the family business, like him and his father before him. Likewise, I wanted Ted to follow in my footsteps. It was his only natural for fathers. And he's made me proud. In fact, he called today to say he's been promoted again. But you're different. You were never cut out for the Army, John. I won't conceal my disappointment that you're not going to continue college.
Oh, Christ, Ed, I can't win. It seems like whatever I do, I wind up disappointing you. Why?
Forgive me. I didn't mean for it to sound like that. You'll do fine, I'm sure. Just keep in mind the family motto.
Don't look back. I know.
Right. Don't look back.
A submarine prowls beneath the waters off the island of Crete.
In October of 1942, Captain John Fitzpatrick of the British Royal Canadians, along with a small detachment, were assigned the mission of destroying enemy radio installations on the island of Crete. This was to be the first of many challenges. The British were now openly fighting back.
Meanwhile, they will head for the radio station 1 mile further and destroy it. Bear in mind that whatever happens, the submarine will leave at 23:30 on the dot.
What if there's some of us that...
Even if not one of us is back on board. That damn radio station is keeping tabs on all our naval traffic between Crete and the African coast. And at this moment, it's vital for the 8th Army to get supplies without problems. Well, everything quite clear.
It's clear.
Okay. Just a few minutes and we go. Let's get ready.
Commander Martin Scott and his men grease their faces. The submarine slowly surfaces. A watchman scans the coast with binoculars.
Weapons on board, Captain.
Point B, sir.
At 23:30.
Be prepared to dive.
Outfitted in diving suits, Martin and six saboteurs board an inflatable dinghy. They start paddling away from the submarine and toward shore. Soon, three of them are swimming underwater toward the German submerged radio installations. Martin and the rest remain in the dinghy. From the shore, a searchlight sweeps across the water.
Down.
As Martin and the others duck down in the dinghy, a searchlight passes over them. Underwater, the divers find a radio installation. Attach a bomb to it.
Captain
searchlight sweeps back across the water. Martin and his three men paddle into a rocky cove beneath the radio station. They disembark and wade to shore. Scrambling up the coastal cliff, they take cover each time the searchlight passes overhead. As a German sentry stands guard at the cliff's edge, the saboteurs sneak up behind him. When a sentry turns around, one of the men spears him in the gut. Underwater, the divers find another radio installation and attach a bomb to it. Atop the cliff, two of the saboteurs run toward the radio station. Martin and the other one creep closer to two German soldiers sitting beneath the searchlight.
It'll never be the same. We'll get used to it. What are you drinking?
Here. I got it for Strauss.
Yeah. It will get your blood moving.
Martin and his colleague draw their knives as the German soldiers drink.
Scheiße, what is that warm about this club? It's good.
They attack the German soldiers and slit their throats. When a third saboteur signals that the coast is clear, Martin and his colleagues steal over to the radio station. Machine guns at the ready, they flank the door to the building. Nodding to each other, they kick down the door and hurl a grenade. Dashing in, they mow down three German soldiers. From the tower, two Germans aim the searchlight at the station. The light picks out a saboteur crouching on the ground. One of the Germans guns him down. Diving out the door, Martin shoots out the searchlight. In the dark, he looks for his colleague.
Wilson! Wilson!
Underwater, the divers attach a bomb to another radio installation. They swim to the surface and give each other the thumbs up. On the edge of the cliff, Martin and the two remaining saboteurs regroup. Martin shakes his head. The underwater bombs begin to explode. Martin checks his watch.
Give the signal to disembark.
One of the saboteurs reaches for his flashlight and flashes the all clear. A British watchman spots the signal through his binoculars. Two motorboats packed with British seamen start for the shore. Suddenly, a ship emerges from behind a rocky cape. It's a German warship bristling with naval guns.
Down!
The men on the motorboats dive for cover. The captain of the warship has spotted them.
Attention! All hands to battle stations! All hands to battle
Up
stations!
7 degrees right! Fire!
The Germans begin firing at the motorboats. On the cliff, Martin stares in horror.
It's useless. There's nothing we can do for them.
As the three saboteurs watch helplessly, the German guns mercilessly decimate their comrades. From behind the radio station, a German sniper cuts down one of the saboteurs. Martin and the other one dive for cover.
They got us. Not if we get to the dinghy. Right, Sarge, race you for a bottle of brown.
Martin makes a dash for the edge of the cliff and dives into the water as the Germans come running from their hideout.
November 1942, the British Army was preparing to take the offensive against the Germans.
In London, a jeep pulls up in front of the British War Office. Professor O'Hara gets out. Entering the building, he marches down the hall and shoves open a door.
There you are.
General Whitmore?
Yes, he's in, but just a moment. You can't go in there.
O'Hara barges into General Whitmore's office.
Whitmore! You scoundrel!
Sean O'Hara.
I'm trying to get you on the phone all week, but some silly bitch keeps telling me you're busy.
General, I'm terribly sorry. The gentleman just...
perfectly all right, Sergeant. Mr. O'Hara and I are very old friends. Sean, I'd like you to meet Sergeant Ann Moffat.
How do you do, Miss Moffat?
Sergeant Moffat. And I believe I'm the silly old bitch you were referring to.
Damn, I've done it again.
Oh, don't let it bother you. She's been called worse things than that. You know, Sean here...
used to be one of the finest
war correspondents in the world.
Used to be? What do you mean, used to be? I still am.
Oh, come off it, Sean. Who are you trying to kid? I mean, didn't you get your start with Roberts in Afghanistan?
With Wellington at war. And don't you forget.
That'll be all, sir.
Moffat heads for the door.
Now, Sean, what can I do for you?
I want to get to the African front, and I need your authorization.
Aren't you a bit old for that kind of fun and games? Why not leave the desert to the youngsters?
I want to see the ruins of Carthage before I die, before they destroy what's left of it.
I didn't know you were a romantic.
Not a romantic, Charlie, just a half-assed classical scholar.
November 1942. A convoy of German tanks advances through the hills. A Greek partisan crouches behind a thicket and watches.
November 1942, a Nazi-occupied Greece started to fight back. It was the British that furnished weapons and leadership to Greek partisans. Began with a guerrilla unit led by Linos Moro.
The partisan signals to Moro's guerrillas that the convoy is approaching a stone bridge.
Do we attack anyway?
Yes.
But instead of the convoy, a single armored van starts across the bridge. It's escorted by two soldiers on a motorcycle. A guerrilla throws a grenade, blowing up the motorcycle of two soldiers. When a German soldier jumps from the van, the guerrillas gun him down. Moro runs behind the van and shoots the lock off the back door.
Come on!
As his comrades come running, he opens the door.
Get out!
And yanks out a German soldier. A truck comes barreling over the bridge. It's packed with German soldiers, their machine guns blazing. When the truck stops, the Germans jump out and continue firing at the guerrillas.
Move in! Move in! Shell!
Another German truck comes wheeling up behind the guerrillas, catching them in a crossfire. One by one, the Germans pick off the guerrillas. Roland gets out of the jeep and grimly surveys the carnage. He turns to the three surviving guerrillas.
Who are you? Your names and rank, please. Who are you?
One of the guerrillas hands him his documents.
Lieutenant William McShane. From New Zealand, eh? And your friend here?
McShane looks over at Morrow. A car drives up. A German officer gets out. He salutes Roland.
Who are they? We have three prisoners. One is English, the other a New Zealand officer, the third...
We do not know. He has no papers.
Then what are you waiting for? Shoot him.
But he might be a regular soldier.
Don't be so scrupulous. He would have told you. Besides, look into his face. He's a filthy Greek. Shoot him, Major, and do it now. We have to get going. We can't stay in these mountains all night.
As he leaves, Roland points to McShane.
This man is a prisoner. Take him away to the nearest area command post.
Spare him, or shoot me too.
As the Germans drag off McShane, Roland approaches Morrow.
Listen to me. I would like to save your life, but you must help me, you understand? Say that you are English. That will be enough.
No. I am Greek.
Then I am sorry.
Roland turns to the German soldiers.
Form the execution squad!
Platoon attention! Ready! Aim! Fire!
Also in November 1942, the Nazi SS were well on their way to implementation of what they referred to as the final solution.
At a Berlin restaurant.
It's very hard to find them nowadays.
An actress of your caliber, Miss Ackerman, must be accustomed to far more beautiful flowers.
My name is Mrs. Roland, Colonel Jorgens.
Ah, yes, I was forgetting. You married one of our brave officers who's now stationed in the Balkans.
You mentioned in the car that you had in mind for me to do a show for the soldiers. I would be very flattered and very pleased. Do you know it is 3 years since I was on the stage?
Ah, yes, of course, the show. Well, there's plenty of time to talk about that later. Instead, there's something else I'd like to talk to you about. Some wine?
Thank you.
I received some letters recently that concern you. You are Jewish, madam. Or rather, you are half Jewish on your father's side. Ah, the host at last. Do take some applesauce, I can assure you it's excellent, delicious.
Is it a privilege to be born an Aryan and a disgrace to be born a Jew?
As Jurgens eats, she leans in closer.
What are you going to do to me?
Annalisa, you will permit me to call you by your Christian name, will you not? Annalisa, it's very difficult to keep your rather irregular racial status a secret. And don't think that it's going to help you much being the wife of a gallant officer like Lieutenant Roland.
Major.
Oh, forgive me, Major. The important thing is that your husband is not a member of the Nazi Party. Or am I mistaken? Any other woman would be doomed, you understand? But I've got a soft spot for you, Annalisa. I've always admired you as an actress and as a woman.
He grabs her hand.
I can help you if you wish. I don't ask much. Just a little kindness. Is that too high a price to pay?
No. It's a very honest price.
Good, then. Let's drink to that, shall we?
Glaring at him, Annalise gets up from the table and hurries out of the restaurant.
By Christmas 1942, The English were still unable to mount a proper offensive. Their plan consisted of limited commando engagements to harass the enemy until British forces could be strengthened. Captain John Fitzpatrick received a short holiday. It would be his last for the next 3 years.
You wait. At the last second, we'll get a phone call.
No, he gave us a promise, and he even sent a telegram, didn't he? He's here!
The two young girls run across the living room of their Plymouth home and open the front door.
Daddy, Daddy, you're here!
Hey, Christmas, kid. Hey, easy, you'll get all wet.
It's Martin.
Oh, good heavens. How you two have grown. The next time I won't even recognize you. Come on inside.
As Martin heads for the living room...
How are you, Martin?
A woman and another man greet him.
Merry Christmas, Sybil.
This is Michael.
Please, make yourself at home.
When Michael extends his hand, Martin awkwardly shakes it.
I'm going to make some tea. Do you want some?
Thanks, yes.
As she leaves, Martin turns to Michael.
I hope I'm not disturbing you. I did so want to see the children.
Of course. If you only knew how badly they wanted to see you, right? Please.
Hey, let's sit by the fire. You know, kids, your daddy's a real lame brain. I'm very sorry, but I forgot your Christmas presents on the train.
It's all right, Daddy. Never mind.
Our present is that you're here with us.
Nice girls.
I wonder if you still remember giving a promise to us how long you'd stay.
And in fact, I'm keeping my promise. A week it is. Happy?
Yes!
Conditions in occupied France over this same Christmas were not as joyous. The French found it difficult to exist. Also, the Germans started to feel the pressures of the war they had created.
In a Le Havre bar...
Are you hungry?
No, thank you.
Bring some thing, at least. Go and eat my own wine, not the filth I served to then. Listen, this is no place for you. Go on home.
To do what? No one's waiting for me.
She turns away from the bartender and looks at a German soldier sitting soberly as the other soldiers carouse. A drunk soldier stands up.
Let's drink a toast to Christmas! To the last Christmas of this lousy, stinking, and filthy war! Well, isn't anyone going to drink to Christmas?
He stares at the sober soldier.
Well?
Kurt Zimmer.
Okay. Let's drink to Christmas and to the war. Another 5 wartime Christmases, if that's what Germany needs to win.
The two men stand and glare at each other. The drunk soldier raises his glass and drinks. As he starts back to his table, Kurt trips him.
And watch your feet.
The woman at the bar smiles admiringly at Kurt. Siren plunges the bar into darkness. Kurt runs over to the woman at the bar.
Are you scared?
Yes.
What's your name?
Danielle.
Will you stay with me until tomorrow? Please. I don't know how long I'll be here. I'm expecting orders to be transferred to a combat zone.
Later that night, Danielle entertains Kurt in her flat. When he tries to kiss her, she pulls away.
Excuse me just a minute. You'll only have to wait a minute.
She brushes past him. Kurt follows her into the kitchen where he finds her nibbling a biscuit.
I offered to buy you dinner. Why didn't you accept?
I was ashamed. In front of all those people. I didn't want them to think that I...
This is the first time, right? Why?
Tomorrow I have to pay the rent, or they'll throw me out. I have nowhere to go. So, I might as well start with you.
I see.
He leaves the kitchen and heads for the door.
No, I beg you, don't go. Kurt... I'll be good, you'll see. Just like the others. Better than the others. Please.
You really need some money, don't you?
I'm going to get ready.
As she starts for the bedroom, Kurt glances around the room. He notices a man's photo on the bureau.
Who's in a photo? Your brother?
My husband. He died a month ago. He was killed in Sedan. By the Germans. Why didn't you open the champagne?
Kurt looks away.
I'm dying. To drink something.
In the bedroom, Danielle takes off her dress. Wearing only a slip, she steps out of the bedroom and crosses the living room. Looking around, she realizes that Kurt is gone. But beside the champagne bottle on the table, she finds several French francs that he has left for her. A plane flies over Normandy at night.
During the last days of 1942, the Americans sent their first commando unit into France. Among them was the son of an American general, Private John Foster.
Hey, Foster, how's you doing? Your old man pulls strings to get you involved in this here great adventure.
In my day, we used to pull strings to stay home.
My mother was French, so I can speak French nearly perfectly. That make you happy?
A red light flashes.
Okay, men, be careful. The countryside down there is full of crowd eaters.
Leap out of the hatch until the night sky is filled with dozens of parachutes. When the commandos hit the ground, a French partisan signals to them with a flashlight. Next day, at a country barn, the partisan Leger hands photos to a colonel.
These are the latest, taken 2 days ago. They tested the points, then the train went back into the tunnel.
Are you sure it's the right train?
Look. Sure it is. A barrel 100 feet long. Range 15 miles.
That train's got to be blown up. That's why they brought paratroopers over.
It's impossible to enter the tunnel. It's guarded night and day at both ends.
One of our informers, a man who works at the German headquarters in Saint-Nazaire, has told us that a move of the train is imminent. When they start getting ready to leave Ango, that's when we go into action.
Okay.
Now, it's essential that we find out exactly when the train is going to leave. And that's going to be your job, Foster, and yours, Leger.
Don't look back.
Did you say something, Foster?
No, sir. I'm ready.
A armored train carrying a huge cannon-like gun emerges from a tunnel in the hillside. Guarded by a large German artillery unit, the train comes to a halt at the station.
Landing position! Up 30 degrees!
The 100-foot barrel is slowly raised.
At this time, the British were already preparing plans for the invasion of Normandy. This command mission was to destroy one of Hitler's newest weapons. It was essential that it be destroyed in order to secure the future success of that Normandy invasion.
Hidden in the bushes behind a barbed wire fence, John and Leger watch as the Germans load ammunition aboard the train.
Here, Will. Quick, light, sir. The wind up again. Flipper! Get the dump up prepared. If it's a tubing against us, we'll have to get the replacement.
German headquarters. A motorcycle pulls up to the front gate. Kurt gets off and marches into the building.
Lieutenant Zimmer, orders have come in concerning your request for a frontline assignment. Africa would be quite a change. Tomorrow, you will be relieved of your command of the armored train. You will consign it to rail headquarters in Saint-Nazaire. Any questions?
No, Major.
Be careful. There's a chance partisans may attack the train. I hope you are aware of this.
No one will get near our convoy.
Excellent, Zimmer. Good luck.
Kurt turns to leave.
Lieutenant.
Yes, sir?
Before you enlisted, what did you do?
I was studying, specializing in electrical engineering.
Specializing? You sound like a very ambitious man.
My only ambition is to serve Germany and the Reich.
Meanwhile, John and Leger return by car to the country barn where the commandos are billeted. They report to the colonel.
The train is at the station. They've been loading ammunition aboard all afternoon. It looks like they're about to move out.
Okay, men, we start to move. Seems the time has come to take the bull by the horns. Cigarette?
No, thanks. I don't smoke.
An athlete. Is that so?
Baseball. I was state all-star when I was in college. It was the only thing I was good at.
I used to play baseball, too. You remember when you had a big game coming up and you couldn't get to sleep the night before? Well, this kind of gives you the same feeling. Tomorrow's a big game for you, the first.
I know, but I'm not afraid. I know I have to do well, and I will, I'm sure.
Try and get some sleep.
At the train station...
Vader! You too!
The Germans lower the huge gun barrel. Kurt boards the train and gives the sign to start. When the signalman waves a red flag, the engineer climbs aboard.
Help!
As the train begins moving, a commando watches furtively from the bushes. He reaches for his radio transmitter.
Hello? Hello? This is White Star. White Star. The goose is going swimming. Over.
Roger. Hello?
At the country barn?
Tell the colonel.
Okay. It just left.
Did you check your weapons?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll meet 1 mile north at point two.
Okay.
As the colonel gets into one car, John and Leger get into another. Meanwhile, the armored train forges through the French countryside. At station number two, the German dispatcher is on the phone.
Yeah, good.
Two armed guards stand by.
Control switch number two, train on way, go.
The French yardmaster spots Leger out the door.
I said go!
Yes, I hear you.
The Frenchman grabs one guard's gun, but the other guard shoots him. John and Leger charge into the station, killing the guards. John guns down the dispatcher. On the train, Kurt keeps a lookout for partisans. Satisfied all is clear, he closes his window. But on the track ahead, the commandos are busy carrying out their plan.
Quick! Give them more than 2 minutes.
John and Leger quickly dig a hole under the tracks. As the train races toward them, they attach a fuse to 4 sticks of dynamite and place the dynamite in the hole. When a German on the train phones station number two, a commando picks up the receiver.
Yeah, good. Yeah, Rosenheim.
As the train barrels toward the station, Leger unrolls the fuse and attaches it to a detonator hidden behind a bush. John kneels down and watches for the train. Suddenly, 2 Germans run up from behind and kill 2 commandos. Wounded, Leger falls to the ground, but he manages to shoot one of the Germans. When the 2nd German fires at him, Leger cuts him down too. 2 more Germans start firing at the commandos. Kneeling down, John picks them both off. Mortally wounded, Leger crawls toward the detonator, then collapses. Hearing the train in the distance, John runs toward the detonator. When a German sniper fires at him, John shoots him down. As the train speeds toward the station, Kurt looks out the window. John reaches for the plunger. The train blows up. As John runs away, Kurt staggers from the fiery inferno and collapses. As he watches Germany's secret weapon go up in flames, An officer rushes to his side.
Lieutenant, are you all right?
The officer carries Kurt to safety.
West Point, New York, January 5th, 1943.
In his office, General Foster ponders his next move on the chessboard. His secretary comes in with an envelope.
It's just a rock for you, sir.
Foster takes the envelope and opens it. Leaning back in his chair, he reads the letter.
Dear Dad, I'm very sorry I couldn't write you in time to wish you Merry Christmas. I am about to head for North Africa with General Alexander. About time. For the moment, I've hardly done anything. Just a bit of action with the railroads, where there were some annoying problems to be solved. I hope to be sending more news in the future. Happy New Year, Dad. And say hello to Ted for me when you see him. Yours, John. P.S. I hope you'll be happy to know I received my lieutenant's commission.
Foster smiles proudly. Then turns to his secretary.
Right. Know of any problems we had with the British railroads?
With the railroads, sir?
You hard of hearing, Frank, with the railroads?
Not that I'm aware of, sir.
Try to get General Marshall on the phone for me, will you?
Right away, sir.
An armed jeep and two trucks drive through North Africa.
By January 43, the Allies were finally ready to commence their first major offensive. It would prove to be the turning point in the war against the fascists.
Better put in some more petrol, lads, or we'll never make it.
Martin rides in the jeep.
Is this your first trip into the desert, sir? When did you arrive?
I landed in Tripoli 2 days ago.
Well, what's the hurry? It would have been wiser for you to have waited for an organized column.
Orders are to reach the general staff of the 12th Armored Division as fast as possible. Couldn't we?
Reconnaissance plane zooms overhead, leaving Martin worried.
He couldn't have missed us out here. Let's go. Come on.
Two German tanks emerge from a thicket.
Get on the machine gun, will you?
Right outside.
Get started.
Returning fire, the convoy takes off. With the Germans in pursuit. A German shell hits a truck. As the jeep and second truck barrel across the sand, the German tanks keep on their tail. One of the gunners in the jeep is shot. The second truck takes a couple of direct hits, but keeps going. The soldiers on the truck start throwing landmines behind them, but a German shell blows the truck to pieces. One tank runs over a mine and explodes. Guns blazing, the second tank keeps chasing after the jeep. A shot cripples the front tire. As the tank collapses into a hole, the jeep makes a getaway. When out of harm's way, it stops. Martin looks at the wounded gunner. Then he turns to his driver.
Yeah, wiser, Sergeant. Let's get to the nearest hospital.
In early February of 1943, the Nazis were forced to step up their own guerrilla maneuvers. Up until now, Hitler's Africa Corps had been on the offensive.
Four U.S. soldiers in a jeep patrol a dirt track in North Africa. One of them spots a man lying on the road ahead.
Hey, look at that. Hold a minute, he might still be alive.
All right, Henry.
As the jeep stops, three German guerrillas watch from behind some bushes. When Henry gets out of the jeep, the man on the ground pulls a gun and shoots him dead. The German guerrillas open fire and cut down the three other U.S. soldiers. One of the Americans is mortally wounded, but still alive. He looks up at the gorilla standing over him.
Kill me, please. Kill me, please. Kill me. Kill me.
A German shoots the young soldier. Later, the four guerrillas, dressed in U.S. Army uniforms, drive the jeep to a ridge overlooking an American-run munitions camp.
Hold it.
The jeep comes to a halt.
There they are. The information was right. When we get down there, don't anyone breathe. If there's any talking to be done, I'll do it. Maybe my 5 years of studying English will be enough to save our lives.
In the camp.
Rommel can't manage an all-out attack. He just hadn't got the supplies. Didn't you know that?
Sure. But our guys must be short, too. Otherwise, why all the trouble to get this gas?
Try and ask Patton then. Then you'll see what answer you get.
The German guerrillas drive the jeep into the camp and stop. They quickly scan the barrels of ammunition. Two guards step up.
Hey, you! Hold on!
Hey, y'all! What are you doing arriving at this hour? Let me see your pass.
The guerrillas reach into their pockets and pull out their passes. They hand the passes to the guard, who gives them a quick once-over.
Okay.
He hands back the passes, and the two guards return to their posts. Three of the guerrillas hop out of the jeep. The fourth remains in the driver's seat.
This goddamn no smoking bit, I just can't take it any longer.
What do you want to do? Run the camp sky high?
No, but I got something in my canteen and it ain't water.
As two soldiers chat, one of the guerrillas places dynamite behind some barrels and lights the fuse. When the soldier removes his canteen from the truck, he notices something on the ground. Bending down, he picks up a German lighter. A gorilla crawls out from under the truck and grabs the soldier in a headlock. As the fuse burns, the gorilla breaks the soldier's neck. The driver pulls the jeep up, and the three gorillas come running.
Hey, you! Run! Run!
As the Americans open fire on the gorillas, the dynamite explodes, and the munitions depot goes up in flames.
The Tunisian front, Field Marshal Rommel's troops and armor have attacked Anglo-American units in the Kasserine area.
By mid-February, Hitler's planned extermination of the Jewish people was well underway. The ovens of Dachau, Buchenwald, and Auschwitz alone had cremated over 5 million human beings.
Leaving her hotel room, Annalise takes the stairs down to the lobby. She notices two SS officers at the front desk. Fearful, she summons her courage and walks up to the receptionist.
Mrs. Roland, I was calling you, but you didn't.
Good morning, Wolfgang. Two packets of cigarettes, please.
These gentlemen are looking for you.
She looks up at the SS men, who stare coldly back at her.
You have to follow us to the Gestrasse Kommandostelle.
I don't understand. Why?
Gestapo, you are under arrest, Mrs. Holland.
Might I... I'd like to telephone Colonel Jürgens of the SS, please.
Yeah?
She picks up the phone.
Hello? Who is this?
Could I speak to Colonel Jürgens, please? It's Mrs. Roland.
One moment, please.
Colonel
does not wish to speak to you.
Speak.
I am sorry.
Well, listen. In that case, would you please tell the Colonel what I wanted to say? My husband is not to blame. And I don't want any harm to come to him.
The SS interrogation room.
There is no hurry. Take it over calmly, madam. We can wait.
I told you. Time after time, day after day, I have nothing to say. We could be here for months, and I still would have nothing to say. I cannot admit to something I haven't done, and I cannot confess to something that I don't know anything about.
We're not accusing you, ma'am. We're just asking you to cooperate. You have been in contact with many people, dangerous people, shall we say, and you still are in contact with some of them. Actors, writers, foreign writers, all artists, in fact. All prepared to betray us. And spies too sometimes. One, this friend of yours, an Englishman, Mr. Morris.
What?
Yeah. Up. Were you aware of his homosexual tendencies?
So what?
So he was blackmailed to work for the British espionage system. Dear Mrs. Rowland, people like you are immoral. Pitiful. You can use the seeds of defeat.
Why can't you tell the truth? If I had agreed to be kind to Colonel Jurgens and carried a colonel's seeds in my belly, you wouldn't consider me immoral or pitiable. Oh, I wouldn't even be a Jew anymore. I wouldn't even be a Jew anymore. But now, listening to you!
I see that you insist on failing to realize the delicate position you are in. Wake up! Make up your mind to confess. Believe me, I want to help you. I'm indebted to you for many lovely evenings spent at the theater.
No.
I'm going to leave you with this piece of paper. It's a list of names. Read it carefully. And then tell me what you know about each of them. You have 10 minutes. If you refuse to cooperate, I will be obliged to transfer you to a punishment camp. You know what that means. Ten minutes, madam.
The two interrogators leave her alone in the room. Sobbing, Annalise touches the paper with a list of names. She crumples the paper in her hand. Looking around the room, she sees a picture of Hitler on the wall next to the balcony door. Stepping out onto the balcony, she climbs over the railing. Then jumps to her death. An SS guard comes running over to her broken body. At a German tank division in North Africa, Roland arrives in a jeep. He gets out and approaches the officer in charge.
Excuse me, Colonel. Major Manfred Roland. I'm supposed to join up with General von Arnim's Merit Army, but I can't find him anywhere.
Further south, Major. You have to go further south. The oasis of Kefren.
Kefren? Thank you, sir.
Roland and his driver head across the desert toward the oasis of Kefren.
Drive as fast as you can. It's 3 hours to Kefren, and there's no shelter anywhere.
The jeep gets stuck in a sand drift. Roland looks up and sees three Allied planes overhead.
Look out!
As the planes strafe the jeep, Roland jumps out and dives to the ground. The jeep explodes in an inferno. Staggers to his feet and watches the burning jeep incinerate his driver. Turning his back to the flames, he starts trudging across the desert. As the relentless sun beats down, Roland loses consciousness and collapses on the sand. At German battalion headquarters in North Africa, Kurt approaches a nurse outside the military hospital.
How is he?
It's hard to say, sir. His pulse is more regular and his temperature is going down, but he hasn't regained consciousness.
Well, I'm going to see him.
Inside the hospital, Roland lies motionless in bed. Kurt enters Roland's room and places a letter on the bedside table. Roland stirs.
Where am I? You're in the hospital. You were found unconscious at the edge of the road, in the middle of the desert. What happened? I don't know. The Volkswagen. No.
Don't think about it.
Jürgen,
don't think about it.
The danger is over. All that you need is a good rest. I came here to bring you this letter. It's postmarked Berlin. It reached battalion headquarters this morning. Annalise. Can I read it for you? Please, if you don't mind. Berlin, February the 5th. Excuse me, what is the date today? February the 20th. My darling, I was so glad to hear from you. The radio says that everything is going well, that the African campaign will soon be over. When are you coming back, Manfred? I need to see you, to be with you. I love you, Manfred. Here, everything is all right, don't worry. This year, the spring was very, very early. The trees on Borgstrasse are already full of new leaves, as you know. There are even flowers in the gardens. What kind of trees are on the Borgstrasse?
Kurt looks over at Roland, who has drifted off. Smiling, Kurt puts the letter back on the side table. He notices a medallion on the table and picks it up. Turning it over, he reads the inscription on the back.
God, I trust.
Well, my name's Montgomery.
British Army Headquarters, March 10th, 1943.
Lieutenant Foster, excuse me, I have to speak to you. There's an urgent message from America for you. From West Point.
Smiling, John follows him into the transmissions room.
Mickey,
come now, sir.
Mickey hands a receiver to John.
John? Are you there? John?
Dad, it's me. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Dad?
John, it's your brother. He was killed in action a week ago. He died like a hero, John.
Dad, can you hear me? Try to be strong.
Only 1 minute to go.
Oh, Christ,
sir.
Let me talk. Dad, can you hear me?
Very well, John. Try to speak louder.
Be strong, Dad. Ted, for us, is still alive. And always will be.
John, you're all I have left now. Forgive me, son. I said I'm proud of you, son. I'm proud.
I can't hear you, Dad.
Sorry, but we lost the contact. It was a miracle we were able to get through at all.
That night, the British soldiers relax over beer in makeshift saloon. O'Hara sits at a table with Jack, an American.
Brother Clemenceau said, war's far too important a matter to be left in the hands of the generals. Don't let them lead you astray, Yank. Stick with me and I'll show you plenty of action.
Action's what I'm after. Louveton News doesn't want me to send back shots of empty desert waste. Only action.
You want action? You'll have action. I was at Metz, at Kaiserdale, at Belleau Wood. I can smell where action's going to happen.
Which reminds me, I know how to get a better good news out of this.
O'Hara gets up and walks over to the bar. A accepting a flask. He notices someone outside standing alone under a palm tree. It's John.
John.
O'Hara walks up to him.
I heard about your brother this afternoon. I'm sorry, I wish there was something I could do.
Thank you. But there's not an awful lot anyone can do.
I too lost a brother in that other great war. You know John Donne, the poet? No man is an island. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If one seed is borne away by the sea's wave, Europe is diminished thereby. Any man's death diminishes me, because I'm involved in mankind, and therefore never need to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
The Maris Line, March 14th, 1943. This was the turning point, the start of it. It was here, at the Maris Line, Tunisia, that the greatest battle began.
Holland, Lieutenant Proctor, if you want.
The Allies will break the back of Hitler's African Corps. For the Nazis, it will be the beginning of the end.
Which means the enemy does not have problems of supply. They don't.
Roland inspects the troops at the Maris Line.
This is all we have?
Yes, sir.
It's impossible.
What is?
Lieutenant, under these conditions, we cannot possibly defend against a major attack. There are no bunkers, no anti-tank ditches, and the artillery is not big enough. Is there any word from supply?
Not that I know of as yet, sir. But they do say this is the best position, that the attack will come from the south.
Lieutenant, in this situation, it makes no difference where the attack is coming from. Unless, of course, you would prefer not to fight.
One day later, on the 15th of March, the German High Command received direct orders from Hitler that there would be no retreat in Africa. Rommel, the Desert Fox, had already been recalled to Berlin. The Nazis were forced to make one last desperate attempt.
I received a message from Berlin a few minutes ago. Marshal Rommel's state of health will not permit him to join us in this battle. I've been assigned the supreme command of this operation. With your help, I shall aim to do my duty until the bitter end.
General, we are considerably inferior in tank and aircraft strength. And the enemy now controls communications.
We will attack the 8th Army on the south. We will move some of our forces to the north. And we will cut off the American access to the sea. There is no other solution. Gentlemen, I trust I can rely on you.
General, we are ready.
Allied tanks prepare to attack the Maris Line.
Fire!
Missiles rain down on the German troops. Intense fire. Roland runs over to the radio transmitter.
Put me through to headquarters! Hello! This is Major Roland! The enemy has been increasing his firepower for the last hour. There can be no doubt the 8th Army is ready to attack! We don't even have enough ammunition!
On the 17th of March, at the headquarters of General Patton, plans were being made to overcome the Nazis' stronghold at Gaspa.
Here, at El Gatar by us, and at El Hama by the New Zealanders and the French.
If we succeed, we will have outflanked the Germans, cutting off their only possible escape route.
General Patton, sir, it's rumored that General Montgomery has a secret strategy.
No, Colonel, I wouldn't say that. Monty will attack according to the book. Air concentration, massive artillery, then ground attack under cover of smoke. Wonder why the Germans haven't caught on yet. But this time he does seem to have something on his mind. He wants to pass through here with a light formation of tanks and take the Germans from the rear. It's a superb idea. But I can't help wondering how he intends to get across that sea of sand. By camelback?
March 18th, 1943. A newly promoted lieutenant, John Foster, and a volunteer detachment of U.S. Rangers set out to find a possible tank route through the desert sand. The Nazis now believe this area to be completely safe from any mechanized attack.
John watches a tank get stuck. He runs toward the beckoning officer.
Over this way, sir. The sand's only 10 inches.
Well, the rocky layer stops here. Probably means there's a diversion of the stratum.
He waves a tank forward.
Simultaneously, at British 8th Army headquarters, Captain Fitzpatrick volunteers to clear the way for Montgomery's major assault.
Thinking of sending you on a mission that's of the utmost importance.
In his office, Fitzpatrick briefs Martin.
In the last few days, we've exerted continuous pressure with our artillery and air attacks on the seaward flank.
Will we attack there?
This was an expedient to bring the enemy reserves to that point. In reality, General Montgomery intends to attack tomorrow morning in the center of their lineup. Now, you, Captain, with a group of 20 sappers are to neutralize the minefield in the main German defense sector. Do you feel up to taking on this assignment?
I'll leave immediately, sir.
Thank you, Captain. Well, let me caution you, as our tanks will be moving off in the morning at exactly 0700, at that hour, the ground must already be completely clear. It's vitally important. And good luck.
Thank you, sir.
March 19th, 1943, 02:45 hours. Martin and his band of saboteurs prowl up behind German soldiers on guard at the main Nazi defense line and slit their throats. Martin scans the German defense headquarters up ahead. Assured that they haven't been spotted, he waves at his fellow saboteurs to begin neutralizing the minefield. Spreading out and crawling along the ground, the men carefully defuse the mines. German defense headquarters, Kurt joins the sentries on duty. Pacing, he suddenly stops and stares hard into the darkness.
There. Over there to the right. Can you see anything?
Can we use our torches, Lieutenant?
Don't do nonsense.
The saboteurs keep working.
Where's that plane?
German flare lights up the field. Kurt spots the saboteurs.
Ah!
The Germans open fire. As German firepower mows down the saboteurs, Martin and two men make a dash for it. They dive into a foxhole. As bullets whiz overhead, Martin turns to his two colleagues.
We can't do it. It'll be dawn soon. There's a large stretch over to the right that's free. I could come that way. Yes, I know. But we've got no way of communicating. Unless we get out of here, we can't let them know.
Dawn arrives.
We crawl out of here, and they pick us all off before we reach the barbed wire. And the tanks will be starting in half an hour.
What's the matter, Brown?
Nothing, Captain. Just a bit of chilled cold.
It's one or the other. Someone has to go. Or we'll be watching mass suicide. Let me try, Captain.
It's no good. If we couldn't manage it in the night, it's unthinkable for us to try now. Harry, courage doesn't mean foolhardiness.
Martin peeks over the edge. Brown cowers. Suddenly, Brown leaps out of the hole and runs across the field under German gunfire. He steps on a landmine and is blown away. At British 8th Army headquarters...
It's on a 7. At 7 on the dot, we'll start moving the tanks. The 11th unit to the right. The 12th toward their minefields in the center. By this time, Captain Scott will have certainly finished the clearing operations.
One day later, Patton's 2nd Corps attacks the German stronghold at Thala.
By 7:45, tanks of the British 8th Army Division are moving toward the German defense line. Martin and his colleague crouch in the hole as Kurt looks through field glasses.
Take care. They'll probably make a break.
As Kurt looks closer, he sees a British tank advancing. So does Martin.
I know I just said that heroism doesn't mean foolhardiness, Sergeant. But now we have no choice. We have to try anyway. Ready? Let's go!
Martin and Sergeant leap out of the hole and dash across the field under intense German fire. As the British tanks draw closer, Martin and the Sergeant dodge the exploding shells. German machine gunner cuts down the sergeant. Guns blazing. The British tanks approach the unswept minefield in front of the German defense headquarters. Martin makes a mad dash across the field toward the tanks. Frantically waving his arms, he gets the tank to stop. As Martin leaps onto a tank, Kurt barks at a German sentry.
Get in touch immediately with headquarters. Move!
On the tank.
The ground in front is full of mines. You must veer off to the right and transmit it immediately to the other tanks.
Right, sir.
Kurt scowls.
They buggered us. It's all over.
Meanwhile, in the desert...
Lieutenant, I've made contact!
John comes running over to an American tank. A U.S. Ranger hands him the radio receiver.
Headquarters! Lieutenant Foster here. I have a message for General Montgomery.
Sir, Lieutenant Foster informs you that the Turkish feet are free as far as the Mississippi. I repeat, feet free as far as the Mississippi. Lieutenant Foster, do you read me? General Montgomery orders you to go
back to the American headquarters at once and make yourself available for anything concerning Operation Mississippi.
Roger. Over.
At the Marath line, Roland watches as the Allied tanks regroup on the horizon. The German soldiers who survived the first attack aim their small guns at the tanks.
Ready with the mortar and the light artillery?
The tanks start firing at them.
Go to the battalion headquarters. Tell them there are too many of them. We can't hold out for too long. We need reinforcements and heavy artillery immediately.
Roland lifts his arm.
Ready!
Fire! As the Germans open fire, the tanks start to advance, unleashing a barrage of firepower. Suddenly, one of the tanks stops. Then another stops. And another. All the tanks follow suit. The front tank turns around and leads a retreat.
Hold your fire!
Roland watches as the tanks withdraw.
They will be back. That you can be sure. You can hold out for an hour, perhaps even a day with luck.
But if the reinforcements do not come, then what?
At a desert crossroads, a Scottish soldier in a tam and kilt directs traffic. O'Hara and Jack pull up in a jeep.
Hey, Scotty, which way's north?
And what would you be wanting to be going north for, Pop?
It's where the fighting is, isn't it?
Well, if it's fighting you want, just follow the sound of the shooting. But I wouldn't suggest it. You seem a wee bit old to be running around. And it could be dangerous.
Old my ass!
Maybe we shouldn't, sir. You heard what he said. It could be dangerous.
Having second thoughts, Yank? Maybe you should have stayed stateside and made movies of old ladies and factories?
Jack drives on. At German battalion headquarters...
This is Lieutenant Schreiber. Fort number 5 has been occupied after a bombardment by an American unit. You must send in a tank squadron immediately. The water deposits are there.
And where are we going to find tanks, Lieutenant?
I don't care where. Find them!
Final desperate attempt to hold their positions, the Germans commit their last panzer reserves.
The battle in the desert rages on between the German panzers and the Allied army tanks. Casualties mount on both sides. A tank mows down at watchtower. The Nazi stronghold is blown up. At West Point, Frank comes into General Foster's office.
What's the word?
It's not much, sir. The situation seems pretty confused according to the news we're getting. The Allies are continuing the offensive, but the Germans are putting up a pretty wicked fight, especially along the Marath line. It should be only a matter of hours now.
As Foster looks at Ted's photo on his desk, Frank turns to leave.
Frank.
Sir?
I don't suppose there's any way we can find out about John, is there?
I don't see how, sir. We have thousands of men out there. It may be days before...
Of course, I don't know what I was thinking of.
Meanwhile, the North African desert erupts in a firestorm as German panzers and Allied tanks face off against each other.
Montgomery's 8th Army resumes the attack on the Marath line.
As the British tanks advance, Roland watches.
There's no one coming. God damn it! They've left us to die like rats.
Maybe there's no one there, Major. With the radio out of action, it's impossible to know anything.
Keep firing those shells!
We can't, sir. There are no more shells.
The tanks bear down on the Germans. As his troop scatters in all directions, Roland dives into a trench. Grabbing a grenade, he ducks down as the tanks roll over the trench. He gets up and runs after a tank. Jumping on it, he climbs on top and throws the grenade in the hatch. A British gunner shoots him in the back. Falling to the ground, Roland watches the tank blow up. Then he succumbs to his fatal wound. At German battalion headquarters...
This is an emergency. Any panzer squadrons on reserve must move immediately back to assembly quadrant B. Enemy tank units are already past the position of the 22nd Artillery Battalion.
Squadrons of panzers begin to pull back.
Following orders, the panzers withdraw. However, Patton's Second Corps has now established a position across their line of retreat.
Patton's tanks open fire on the Germans. Panzers fire back. The desert is raked with a catastrophically destructive battle. Headquarters.
I don't give a damn if they are tired. If they try stopping now, I'll see the shit blood for a week. I promised Monty we'd be in El Alamein 2 days. And by God, we'll be there. Is that clear?
As his lieutenants hurry out, John comes in.
General, liaison Lieutenant John Foster. He has a message from the British headquarters.
I've been waiting for you.
General Montgomery has instructed me to inform you that reconnaissance units have found a passage through the depression west of the Matmata, and that British and New Zealand formations are already outflanking the enemy lines.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Monty already told me that 6 hours ago by radio. One moment, Lieutenant Foster. Since Monty seems to like sending you back and forth, I wouldn't want this trip to be for nothing. Tell him for me that I'll be there at El Alamein punctual as usual, but that he's not to try to be in Gabes 5 days from now. Okay? You can go now, Lieutenant. Good luck.
Loud mortars!
In the desert, British troops fire mortar shells at the Germans. O'Hara surveys the battlefield while Jack films the action.
What do you mean, let's go? Where?
Where the action is. Nothing much happening here.
Hey, mister, you really are crazy. Are you trying to get killed?
What's the matter, son? Chitting green? Just to think, they said I was too old for this. Truth is, all you chaps are too young. Well, see you around.
At a desert crossroads, John and his driver pull up in a jeep.
Hey, Lieutenant, where's the Army headquarters?
I wouldn't guess that. Why don't you have a look at Piccadilly Circus?
The jeep heads off into the desert. at Nazi defense headquarters. An Allied air raid sends the Germans fleeing.
After 2 months of continuous fighting, the Allies finally drove the Nazis out of North Africa. On May 13th, 1943, the Nazi Africa Corps surrendered. 275,000 Axis prisoners were taken. The greatest battle was over.
John finds Kurt lying in a field.
Kill me, please. Kill me.
John holds a canteen to Kurt's lips. Kurt drinks. Then dies of his wounds. A Scottish regiment marches across a field once held by the Germans. John and his driver pull up in their jeep and stop beside an officer on a tank.
Captain!
It's Martin.
I'm sure glad to find you.
Hello, Foster. You out for a tootle in the sand, too?
We were looking for 8th Army Headquarters, sir. I have a message from General Patton to General Montgomery.
Hunt is marching on Wadi Karit. Somewhere over that way. Maybe he wants to catch von Arnim before he plays another nasty joke on him.
I'll get going immediately, sir.
Don't rush, lad. The battle's won. You can take it easy. Do you have any water?
John hands him his canteen.
Was this your first battle?
Yes, Captain, the first.
Then I want to give you something as a souvenir. Look.
He reaches into his pocket.
I found it round the neck of a dead German major. I almost ran him over with my tank. Poor bastard.
He hands a medallion to John.
Funny. My dad has one exactly like this. But it has Gott mit uns written on it.
You see? It's fate. So long, Foster. Good luck.
John's driver turns the key, but the jeep won't start.
God damn it. We'll be stuck here for hours.
What's happened? It wouldn't by any chance be out of gas.
We'll never be able to reach headquarters before the end of the battle.
Don't let it get you down. How old are you, Lieutenant?
22.
22. Don't rush things, lad. You'll be seeing other wars and battles. But now think about living. Okay?
Captain!
Yes, I'm coming.
As Martin leaves, John ponders his words. Los Angeles, March 30th, 1943. In a military cemetery, among the neatly lined rows of headstones, General Foster pauses. He looks down sadly at one of the stones. It's the grave of his son, Ted. As he heads back to his car, another car speeds up and stops.
General.
Frank gets out.
There's news from Africa, sir. It's about your son, John. He's come through his first action with flying colors. In fact, they've appointed him aide to General Patton.
God, thank God. Thank you, Frank. That's wonderful news.